Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Specifically, tonight's episode includes themes of suicidal ideation. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Horror Hill. I'm Eric Peabody. Tonight, we bid farewell to season 14. That's right, another full season of Horror Hill is in the books, but that doesn't mean we're finished quite yet. We still have one final tale, The Horrible, by Sam Morris. Sam Morris is no stranger to this podcast, and I've been fortunate enough to feature a number of his stories in the past. Tonight's tale opens with a scene so bucolic that it immediately got me hinked up for the other shoe to drop. A young girl in a beautiful house on a gorgeous late summer day playing piano. I know when I'm being set up for an unexpected gut punch, listeners, but this story had something more insidious in mind. Yes, things do get ugly for our young protagonist, but there are sometimes dangers within that are far more perilous than the dangers without. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Sam Morris, I give you The Horrible. Prologue. No one knows where it comes from. Madeline Rappaport sat at an ivory-white bench playing a matching Kei Kawai baby grand piano. This afternoon was unique, as she found an hour or two with her family's entire mansion all to herself. She could play piano, and she could play it as loud as she wished. On this day, she finished a brand new original piece. In her mere 13 years on planet Earth, she had amassed a treasure chest of talent that would have taken decades for even the most gifted players or composers to discover. Her first time playing this piece in its entirety, Madeline was just as much the audience as she was the performer. A glorious melody was placed around the core of the music like a lifelong jeweler would perfectly press diamonds onto a timeless ring. Madeline smiled. She presented a range of dynamic volume and texture throughout the piece, as if capturing all of the light and shadow on an alpine evening. Arpeggios intricately waved up and down 88 keys, her hands overlapping one another with an equal force of nature as dolphins dancing and leaping through and above water. Soon, within Madeline's mind, the binary black and white piano keys dissolved into a swirling, iridescent wind that lifted any sorrow or worry from the world. Her brown eyes softened and unfocused from the handwritten sheet music, turning up toward a nearby window. Her brain would have noticed a sunny front yard, affixed with poplar and pine trees, and a few scattered, chattering squirrels. Her eyesight was all but turned off, though. The visions within her brain were beautifully lost in music, and even a placid scene outside would prove ugly against the product of her imagination. "Keep going," a voice within her, which sounded like her, softly encouraged. Madeline kept on, obeying the friendly order. She closed her eyes and lifted her head, breathing deeply through her nose, filling her body with air and music. "This is the greatest thing you've ever written," the kind little voice whispered within her yet again. "Almost there. Let's finish this perfectly." Madeline nodded to herself as her hands kept moving over the keyboard. She was reaching the end of the piece. The music swelled into a glorious climax, pulling several melodies together into a perfectly balanced fugue. She was no longer playing piano. She was flying. She was flying, and her airplane was the entire concept of a piano, the entire possibility of what wood and wire could be. Finally, she hit the last written chord, taking her hands away from the keys, but keeping her right foot on the damper pedal until the golden tones fully dissipated. "Good. Perfect," the encouraging voice congratulated her. Madeline smiled and ran her fingers through her long brown hair. She returned to Earth, proud of what she had accomplished. Then, another voice entered her psyche. It was a different voice, one that didn't sound like her. It sounded lower and rougher. It immediately didn't sound like a friend at all. "Again, Madeline," it barked. Madeline sat up, wondering where this was coming from. A cloud passed somewhere over the mansion, and the front yard was stained with shadow. "Play it again, Madeline." Madeline felt a bit uneasy, but then slowly started flipping the pages of her sheet music back to the start of the piece. She supposed that practice did indeed make perfect, even if she had already deemed her performance as the best she could do. Hey, she had the house to herself, and her brother and the babysitter wouldn't be home for a while longer, so why not play some more? She smiled and placed her fingers back at their starting positions. "Play it again, and if you fail even once or play a single wrong note, then your parents will die," the new, gravelly, angry voice in her head announced. Madeline's eyes widened. She felt an electric current sweep over her scalp and neck. "That's right, Madeline. By now, they're probably in the air. Lots of planes are crashing these days. Theirs could easily be next. It's all up to you and how you play right now." The voice dripped with evil, as if it were holding a gun to everything Madeline loved. She began to breathe quickly and shallowly. Her hands trembled over the keys. Suddenly, all logic escaped out of the chimney of her mind. She thought she knew what she had to do. She nodded and began to play. The performance started perfectly yet again, but at about the halfway mark, Madeline began to picture her parents. She pictured them buckled into their airplane seats, her mother sleeping and her father reading a magazine. Then she saw her father turn to face out the cabin window at a terrible engine fire. Bird strike. She saw him wake up her mother, who sat up and screamed at the disaster. Madeline could see the plane dive down, spiraling toward the ground at a speed that should have killed her parents for merely the G-force alone. But no, her parents stayed conscious long enough to feel the blinding terror of approaching death. In her mind, she saw her parents crying and sweating and holding each other right before the moment of impact.
thud.
Madeline froze. She had hit a wrong note. She couldn't breathe. She only stared down at her right hand, which still pressed the sour key, her failure ringing in her ears.
"Your parents are dead! Dead! Burned up and dead! How could you let this happen? It's all your fault. You should kill yourself."
The angry, evil voice boomed within Madeline's brain. She slapped her hands to her ears and screamed. She screamed and stomped her feet, the painful noise echoing throughout her parents' mansion. No one knows where it comes from. Part 1. The Cave. Four young people walked together along a forest trail, two in front and two behind. The year was approaching the end of summer, a summer that proved to be unusually pyretic. The recent weeks of sweltering heat waves had finally broken into cool relief, and so casual outdoor activity could resume. Leading the walking group was Rose Blanchard and her boyfriend, Devin Walton. They were both 22, having met in their senior year of college. They snickered playfully, always enjoying each other's company. Behind them, in almost total silence, walked Madeline Rappaport and her brother Tony. Tony held a thick book under his arm, and Madeline carried a Canon EOS R7 camera, hung around her neck, awkwardly bouncing against her chest as she kept her eyes to the gravel. Tony, 11 years old, glanced over to his older sister. He could tell she wasn't feeling well. He could sense it the moment that he and Rose and Devin had all pulled into the Rappaport mansion to pick her up to go to the park. Her irises had been red from crying. She hid it well from the others, but she couldn't hide her pain from a younger brother's all-noticing eyes. "Maddie?" he whispered, trying not to alert the couple in front of them, wanting to keep the conversation between siblings. Madeline walked on, seemingly not having heard Tony. Her eyes were to the ground, twitching rapidly. Her mouth was moving as well, although she made no noise. She was counting. Madeline had spent a better part of the afternoon in unspeakable agony. Ever since she messed up her piano performance, she had borne a weight of guilt that only murderers can understand. In her mind, her parents were dead. And now, they could all only wait to hear the dreadful news about their plane crash. Rose, their babysitter, had a phone and had the parents' numbers, but with a long day of travel and spotty international signal, it would be fruitless to try and contact them until they got to the resort, where they could connect to Wi-Fi and put in a call home. They should have called by now, Madeline decided. They should have called to check in on their kids, tired from a long travel day, but excited to arrive at their resort and begin their vacation. They wouldn't call. It was already too late, Madeline told herself. They were dead. Little charred pieces of their bodies floating in the South Atlantic, soon to be filling the stomachs of sharks and other carnivorous fish and birds. As she awaited the horrible news, Madeline did one of the only activities that could point her inflamed mind in a different direction. She counted. In this instance, she counted rocks along the gravel path. She counted every single rock that she could, assorting them into even-numbered groups. 8 here, 10 there. It helped, slightly. At least she could do something to even halfway distract her from the doom that this random late August Saturday had decided to present. "Maddie?" Tony raised his voice a little more this time, wanting to make sure to get a valid response from her. He tapped her on the shoulder. Rose and Devin walked on in front of them, lost in their own much nicer world. "What?" Madeline responded, not taking her eyes off of the rocks below. "Are you okay?" Tony asked. "I'm fine," she whispered. "Aren't you going to take any pictures of birds?" Tony had a bit of conviction in this question. Madeline had just recently developed a love for bird watching. "Not bird watching, it's called birding, Tony," she would argue. She routinely picked up obscure hobbies and would form her entire life around them. The only hobby that really stuck and waxed into a lifelong skill was piano. Tony would tease her about the hobbies that he found a little dorky, like her bird obsession. At his core, though, Tony loved his big sister and appreciated all of her otherworldly talents. A big sister is always a younger brother's hero, whether he ever admits it or not. Tony hated seeing his hero so troubled. "Well?" Tony repeated. "Well, what?" Madeline finally glanced toward him, throwing her eyes open briefly before returning them to the uncounted rocks. "Are you going to take pictures of birds?" Yeah, in a minute." "What are you doing? What's wrong with you?"
"Nothing, Tony. I'm okay.
Whatever, Maddie." Tony gave up the fight and pointed his attention back ahead, the big book under his arm. "Boy, they are quiet," Devin whispered to his girlfriend as they walked on. Rose flashed her eyes back behind them. The two siblings were indeed not talking. She never wanted to be too hands-on of a babysitter. She wanted to value their privacy and their individuality. She had known the Rappaport family most of her life and had babysat Madeline and Tony for 5 years at this point. She respected them. She liked them a lot. And she knew when and when not to intervene with their wide range of moods.
"Oh, they're fine. Probably just missing their parents," Rose whispered back to Devin. She gave him a tiny wink and then grabbed his hand. She thought she loved him and was preparing to let it be known to him. He was only a couple inches taller than her and a bit overweight, but he had a full head of thick hair and a very handsome face. That more than justified her infatuations. Rose herself was secretly considered by her friends to be well out of Devin's league. She had auburn hair, fair, if not extensively pale skin, and dark green eyes. Her green eyes, however, had beheld Devin and had found Devin to be beautiful. That sort of crush is heavy for a young woman and extremely hard to lift.
"I gotcha. Should we talk to them, though?" Devin asked, trying not to alert the children that they were being talked about.
No, it's fine, really," Rose replied, before a sudden buzzing made her jolt.
Within Rose's purse came the all-too-familiar vibrating of a phone call. Rose paused her walk to take out her phone and answer it. Devin stopped as well. Behind them, Tony and Madeline also noticed. Madeline froze, both outside and in. This was it. This was the acute, violent attack she had been waiting hours for. She was so scared that she couldn't even count rocks anymore. She grabbed her left forearm with her right hand and squeezed hard enough to where she could mask her trembling. Rose raised the phone to her ear.
"Hello? Oh, hey guys. All right, that's great. Oh, wow, I'm jealous. No, we're good. We're here at Hidden Lake on a hike. They're good. They're walking with me and Devin. He's good. Yep, they're good too. We just all miss you."
"Yes, we sure will.
Yes, I do have the Capital One card. Thank you again."
"Okay, great. We miss you."
"Okay, awesome. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye."
Rose turned to the children with a smile.
"That was your parents. They're all safe at the resort. They said they'd call again later and check up on you."
Rose turned back to a smiling Devin, and then ahead to the trail yet again, restarting the hike.
"Okay, cool,"
Tony answered with a nod and began walking again as well. Madeline's mouth was slightly open, and she couldn't even blink. She felt a wave of relief that could have cooled over a volcanic eruption.
"They're okay?" she asked up to Rose.
Rose paused and turned back.
"Yes, sweetie, they're fine," she said with a beautifully clean smile. "Did you bring that big camera just as a fashion statement?"
Madeline looked down to her chest. She grabbed the camera with both hands. Her brain felt so soothed. The balm of good news can heal a horde of problems. She felt like she had just been given a new life. She didn't care to count rocks anymore. She felt so good.
"Oh yeah, you're right."
Madeline lifted the camera to her eyes and pointed them up to the trees.
Tony smiled over to his big sister, happy to see her smile. "Atta girl," Rose hollered as she grabbed Devin's hand again. He gave her cheek a kiss. Madeline breathed easy as she looked into the camera and up into the canopy above. She felt a cool breeze around her, one she would have noticed a lot sooner had she not been buried in her mind. Through the lens, she saw thousands of leaves. The rare, refreshing breeze shook the leaves and even loosed a few of the browner ones. In fact, even the healthy ones showed a slight hue of yellow and orange. Yes, the entire forest whispered with the rumors of autumn. "Where are you?" Maddie whispered to herself.
"Oh, they're here. I've been hearing them this whole time," Tony said, adjusting the book under his arm, which had begun to grow heavy.
Tony was scrawny and by no means a strong boy. He looked down at it as if to question why on earth he had brought it on a hike in the first place. Madeline focused through the zoomed-in scope of the forest ether, scanning for any movement. She multitasked, able to walk the trail and look above through her camera at the same time. This worked for a few yards. Suddenly, her mechanically advanced eyesight caught a swift blur of deep ocean blue fly by way up there. She let out a short gasp, just as her right foot caught a root and she almost fell all the way down to the gravel.
"Crap!" she exclaimed, regaining her balance and composure.
"You okay, clumsy?" Tony chuckled. Rose and Devin also noticed and turned around. "You're gonna hurt yourself if you try to walk and look through that thing at the same time, sweetie," Rose kindly remarked.
"Yeah, we can stop for a rest if you all want," Devin added, his brow showing a heavy layer of sweat.
"No, it's fine. Let's just keep going. I'm fine,"
Madeline sharply decided. Rose and Devin gave each other a wide-eyed look of half-surprise and half-humor. Tony shook his head and smiled. Madeline looked back up to the same tree she had just seen the burst of color at. Nothing was there now. She cursed herself within.
"You failure."
A low, gritty voice that Madeline hoped to never hear again scratched at her from inside her mind. She instantly felt the hairs all over her body react. Her lungs were paralyzed.
"You can't even find birds. You're an absolute failure. You should kill yourself tonight when you get home."
The voice barked at her like a rabid Doberman. Madeline nervously shook her head and blinked heavily. The camera shook within her frightened hands.
"Maddie, look!"
Tony said and pointed over to the side of the trail where she was. Madeline shot her eyes over to a low branch. There, sitting wonderfully and beautifully, was a small bluish bird. It called to them. Its noise was a fun, sporadic little swizzle. It was a noise that Madeline had never heard before in person. To her, it sounded like somebody writing in cursive very quickly over a plastic notebook cover.
"Indigo bunting!"
she shouted. Everyone else stopped and looked over to where she was excitedly studying. Just as she raised the camera to get a photo, the bluish, wonderful little bird flew off, deeper into the forest off-trail.
"No!"
Madeline yelled. She twitched her eyes around deeper in the woods and found the bird again, resting on a higher branch just dozens of feet away from them.
"Go get it, champ!" Devin encouraged.
"Yeah, just be careful, Maddie," Rose added. "We'll be right here waiting."
Madeline shook her head quickly up and down at them, her eyes wide and desperate. She took off into the woods.
"What are we supposed to do until she gets back?"
Tony asked, with less of an annoyance and more of a genuine curiosity.
"You, my friend, are going to tell me what that gigantic book under your arm is."
Devin smiled and pointed a fleshy finger.
"Oh yeah, this is for summer reading. I don't know, I haven't started it yet."
Tony shrugged.
"Isn't school like starting the week after next?"
Rose added with raised eyebrow.
"Yeah, I'll finish it by then,"
he said, unconvincingly.
"What is it?"
Devin asked, reaching out a hand. Tony gave him the mighty book.
"Oh, no way they're still making you all read this. Is this for Mr. Gardner's history class?"
Devin asked with a laugh.
"Yep,"
Tony responded.
"Wait, what is it?"
Rose asked for the book from Devin.
"Ew, what? Unusual war crimes? That's disgusting.
Oh, babe, this book is gnarly. Devon snarled with a playful evil.
Is it really? Tony perked up.
Oh, yeah, dude. You gotta start with the chapter about the long-eared bear. It is insane.
Devon took the book back from Rose and started flipping through it until he came to a spot near the end.
Yep, that's it. You gotta start there. That thing still haunts me to this day, dude.
Devon, your nose? Rose remarked, pointing at Devon's face. A small red flow poured out of his left nostril.
Oh, crap. Oops,
he said, half embarrassed. He would often get nosebleeds. Nothing to be concerned with, according to the doctor, but an inconvenience nevertheless. Rose reached in her purse and took out a napkin and blotted it under Devon's nose and around his mouth. Tony just watched, having been used to the occasional bleeding from Devon.
I'll read that chapter tonight, Devon.
Oh, dude, you won't believe it,
Devon responded as Rose finished drying his blood. Devon's eyes fell to the ground, something shiny having caught his attention.
Ooh, what's this?
He said with the glee of a child in a toy store. He squatted down and picked up a beautiful, naturally sculpted black stone.
Nice one, dude.
Tony knew that Devon was always on the lookout for cool rocks.
You can put it in my purse, babe, Rose suggested.
Thanks.
Devon turned the stone in his hand a moment longer and then gave it to Rose, who tucked it into her white leather bag. Tony looked back into the forest toward where Madeline had gone.
She's fine, Tony. Let's just give her some space. I can tell she's a little off today and she probably needs a little alone time,
Rose said with a nod. Madeline Rappaport stood at the mouth of a cave. She had tracked the indigo bunting hundreds of yards through the forest, ducking under branches and collecting several cuts from thorns and stinging nettle. The elusive bird kept evading her focused lens, sensing that it was being stalked by a potential predator. The cicadas of the late summer screamed in the trees around Madeline, but were all but mute against the incessant roaring of her inflamed thoughts. That low, serrated voice had kept telling her she was a failure and told her that she should kill herself tonight when they got home. It told her that she had strange, violent sexual impulses toward Devon and towards Rose, and it also told her that she needed to murder her brother Tony. If she could only capture this indigo bunting on camera, then maybe the voice would cease those torments. She had followed the bird past the property line of the state park and across a railroad track, where she carefully climbed up the pale gravel and over the iron and wood, avoiding sharp debris. She ignored a sign at the tree line that read, "Private, stay out," and kept on trudging. Now, she was here, staring into a natural cavity in one of the countless bluffs in the area. Minutes before, she had seen the indigo bunting fly directly into the darkness. A moment later, she had heard what sounded like the bird in utter distress, a brief, desperate alarm, before nothing more. Something about this cave intoxicated Madeline. To the sides of the mouth were the various vandalizations of graffiti, ranging from rude quips to unintelligible gang symbols. Above the mouth, however, there was something unusual. Deep, ancient markings within the limestone decorated the area above the opening of Earth. Madeline didn't recognize the language, but noticed that it must have been really old, as it looked a lot like the names and dates on the oldest gravestones in the cemetery, the ones from the 1700s. It read, "Muk Akana Sijek Kori Jin Ker." Upon scanning her eyes over these ancient words, the voice within her mind changed. It became almost sweet and wholly solemn.
"Mercy, mercy, mercy."
It was almost as if it was praying. Madeline's eyes glazed over.
"Love, mercy, miracle."
She lowered the camera in her hand until it was held up by the nylon strap around her neck. She didn't blink, only staring deeper and deeper into the impossibly dark cave. A cool wind rustled prematurely fallen leaves.
Miracle. Miracle. Savior.
The voice grew louder between Madeline's unpierced ears. The ends of her long brown hair lifted in the breeze. Her eyes remained fixed.
Savior. Savior. Mother. Mother.
God.
God. God.
Her inner voice was worshiping whatever lay inside this cave. Madeline, entranced, began slowly walking up to and inside the mouth, passing by a neat pile of colorful rocks just at the edge. She walked over dirt and stone until the last lights from the outside world no longer reached. Madeline had disassociated, as she tended to do when extremely overwhelmed. She never blinked. She was enveloped in total darkness, total isolation. At least, at first. Slop, 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 slop. A sound like a soaked mop slapping a wood floor sloshed out through the cave. Madeline slowly turned her head left and right. It was coming from her left, far off in a tenebrous corner of this great hole. Still in a heavy daze, she lifted the camera to her eyes. She moved a switch and put the camera into night scene mode, which would give her a burst of photographs enhanced for low lighting. She pressed the shutter button. Click, 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 click. She lowered the camera and saw the footage on her monitor. Had she been in her right mind, Madeline would have screamed at the top of her young lungs and fled the cave that very instant. Had she been there in her body at all, she would have ran and ran and ran until she collapsed. The series of photographs showed something large, hunched over what appeared to be a dead deer or a dead cow. Whatever it was reaching gangly, twisted arms into the carcass and pulling out the suet of the animal, rubbing handfuls of the globules of fat over its deeply porous skin. The final photograph showed the big creature turning and looking directly into the camera, with vertical, yellow eyes thrown open in surprise. Madeline didn't react at all. She simply lowered the camera back down and looked over in the dark corner. There, within the black, shone two yellow, vertical eyes, just like she had photographed. They started low, but then raised up as high as she believed the ceiling to the cave would go. Stomp, 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 stomp. The walls of the cave vibrated with each heavy footfall. Soon, those yellow eyes were right over Madeline, who looked up without fear. Madeline. A new voice came to Madeline's ears. A sweet voice, a woman's voice. The voice of a woman that didn't sound much older than Rose. Madeline smiled up to the pair of yellow, almond eyes, pupils as black as the cave around them, pointed straight down at her. She began to feel herself being lifted up off of her feet, up to where she could stare into the yellow eyes without moving her neck. Madeline, what do you wish? The sweet, feminine voice cooed out to her. It sounded curious and kind. Madeline instantly found her answer. I wish you would take the horrible darkness from my mind, she responded with pure absolution. The yellow eyes shrank slightly. Are you sure? Yes, Madeline sounded terribly certain. As you wish. Now, sleep. Madeline was lowered back to the cold dirt of the cave. She stared up at the yellow eyes, which remained fixed on her. But then the large creature turned away, stomping back to the far corner of the dark cavern. Madeline felt her own eyes becoming impossibly heavy, and she sat down on the stone floor before giving up and entirely collapsing into sleep.
Maddie, there you are!
The voice of Tony Rappaport echoed into the waking ears of Madeline. She opened her eyes. She was sitting outside of the cave, several feet from the mouth. She looked over and saw Tony, Rose, and Devon quickly approaching. She smiled. Her mind was strangely quiet.
"Hey, guys,"
she said with a wave. Tony and Rose got to her first after a brief gallop. Rose looked winded. She breathed heavily.
"You ran off, Maddie. It took us a while to find you."
"Yeah, bozo, what took you so long?"
Tony teased with a legitimate twinge of concern.
"Did you get the bunting?"
Devon shouted as he jogged up, his breath pained with cardio. He put his hands on his knees, his eyes squinted.
"I got it all. How did you find me?"
Madeline asked, overjoyed to see some of her favorite people in the world. She loved them.
"Well, as I've told you before, your parents have trackers on all your devices, so it was pretty easy, luckily,"
Rose answered, flashing a look to her and Tony.
"Oh yeah, that's right,"
Madeline happily squeaked.
"Are you okay, Maddie?"
Tony asked her, one of his brows raising with brotherly suspicion.
"Oh, I'm great,"
she responded, her mind suddenly filled with light and peace.
"What should we do for dinner?"
"Great question," said Devon, who had finally caught his unathletic breath.
He glanced over to the pile of colorful rocks just to the right of Madeline.
"Ooh,"
he shrieked. Eyes wide, he reached down and picked one up, black with a hypnotic swirl of emerald green. He walked over and showed it to Rose, who nodded. Devon slipped the stone into Rose's purse.
"Let's get out of here, kiddos,"
Rose said, and walked over to put an arm around Madeline. Together, the four young people made their way out of the park into the car. Madeline smiled up at the forest canopy the entire time, lost in her own happy world. No one knows where it comes from. Part 2. The Shadow. The day melted into a pleasant evening over the Rappaport mansion. An almost full moon glowed above. The sturgeon moon was next, Devon pointed out as they made their way through the tall front gate. A fog rested over the moistened grounds, its pale color accentuated on this unusually bright night. The four young people went to their respective quarters, cleaned up, got dressed, and all congregated for dinner in the mansion's kitchen and dining area, which could have easily passed as an upscale hotel lobby. Food was ordered and delivered from two different local restaurants, a big thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Rappaport's credit card. And so, Rose, Devon, Tony, and Madeline all shared a lovely meal together. Madeline was especially bubbly, laughing at Devon's jokes and finishing her entire takeout bowl of spicy pad thai. Tony was in high spirits as well, especially enjoying seeing his sister so calm and funny. His own meatball sub didn't stand a chance. Rose always made it a point to try and give each child equal attention, so she asked Tony all about his summer hockey league and about what he looked forward to in the new school year. She then turned to Madeline, who sat with a sunny smile.
"So, Madeline, I hear you're already getting letters from Juilliard."
Rose lifted her perfectly groomed eyebrows and placed a napkin over her vegetarian ramen.
"Oh, yeah, I guess that's right,"
Madeline answered with a nod. Tony looked at her with a bit of surprise at her response. Rose noticed the casual tone in which Madeline talked about her dream school.
"Well, would you like to play something for us that you've composed recently? We always love it when you serenade us,"
Rose said, gently coaxing the girl and nudging Devon, who was diving into his second meatball sub. Devon chewed quickly, swallowed, and gave a, "Hear, hear!" Madeline paused and looked down at the large mahogany table. Strangely, playing piano was the last thing in the world she wanted to do.
No thanks, that's okay. I think I just want to go to bed,"
she answered with a smile and began to pick up her dishes. Devon and Tony shared a look.
"Maddie, come on,"
Tony asked.
"That's okay, maybe tomorrow."
Madeline walked over to the sink, placed in her silverware, and threw away her takeout bowl.
"Good night, everyone. Today was so lovely. Thank you,"
she sweetly regaled before leaving the dining area off toward her and her brother's wing of the mansion. The three remaining
all looked at each other with puzzled expressions.
"That's not very like her," Devin whispered, wiping marinara sauce off of his mouth.
"Huh. Oh, well. Tony, feel free to run off too, I guess, if you're tired of hanging out with the old people."
Rose flashed a sarcastic smile at Tony, who remained off-put by Madeline's behavior.
"Okay. I have some reading to do."
Tony went and did his dishes quickly.
"Good night, guys."
He waved as he passed by the table and off into the dark hallways toward his room. Rose and Devin waved back.
"Interesting couple of kids," Devin said. "Is it about time for a trip to the cellar?"
"Oh, yes. I'll grab one. You always grab the most expensive bottle they got."
Rose rolled her eyes and squeezed Devin's left arm.
"I mean, babe, they're loaded. Like they care."
Rose walked through the kitchen and over to a door that led down to the wine cellar. She creaked it open and started down the stairs, but then paused. All of the walls of the stairwell were made of lacquered pinewood paneling, covered in dark brown spots of sap stain. Three of these large dots caught Rose's attention. In her mind, they formed a face. In her eyes, she saw a howling, tortured face that silently screamed at her with a proportionally cavernous mouth. Her eyes unfocused, and she went into a daze. She just stared at the wood spots from the top of the stairs for almost a full 2 minutes. She just couldn't shake the mental image of that howling, hungry face. She thought she began to see it move.
"She knows we have it!" A booming voice erupted behind her, breaking her from her hypnosis.
She jumped, miraculously grabbing the rail and not tumbling down the stairs.
"What?" she yelled and turned around to face a bewildered Devin.
"You just want me to grab it? That's all I said," he replied sheepishly.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm just gonna go lay down for a minute."
She went up and passed a confused Devin, who shrugged and made his way down the stairs into the dark wine cellar. He sort of knew his way around the room, which was the size of most liquor stores. He didn't bother turning on the light, trusting that whatever bottle he chose would be some of the best wine he had ever drank. He reached down and felt a tube of dusty glass.
"Slop."
Devin froze. He thought he had heard something in the dark cellar, somewhere further down the rows of bottles and barrels. His breath stopped so he could listen better. After a few seconds of silence, he resumed his task, shaking off the momentary scare, although hurrying himself back up the stairs to the main floor of the mansion. Meanwhile, in the east wing of the house where the children stayed, rooms far apart but connected by a long hallway, Tony found himself buried in a large book titled Unusual War Crimes. He laid in bed, a small flashlight tucked under his chin as he turned pages. He was reading the chapter that Devin had recommended and was learning all about the long-eared bear. A frightful affair. Tony could only stretch wide eyes at the horrible story that opened before him. Apparently, toward the end of World War II, the Russians had experimented with prisoners of war, although evidence went purposefully underdocumented. One such case involved a Russian army deserter who had fled from a battlefield in Belarus, soon to be captured by his former comrades. Deep within the bowels of Russian military complexes, this deserter was held and tortured by one Dr. Kovarny. Kovarny believed within his amphetamine-sizzled mind that the war could be won, as could all other wars, as soon as Russia developed what he called the Super Soldat, or a League of Super Soldiers. Wanting to use the Russian prisoner for his strong stock, but not wanting to take lightly the treasonous act of desertion, Dr. Kovarny went to his brutal work. Kovarny threw the prisoner into an industrial oven and baked him alive, making sure to open the small window every few minutes to make eye contact with the screaming, cooking man. After the prisoner was well done, Kovarny surgically removed the brain and eyes of the body and implanted them into the head of a Kamchatka brown bear
that had also been captured and killed. The super soldat must have the strongest brain, the sharpest eyes and ears, and the mightiest body. A drug-addled Dr. Kovarni would command over his assistants as they cut and sewed and mixed together pieces of man and beast. The final touch involved removing the bear's ears and replacing them with the long ears of a Russian hare, gruesomely stitching them into place on top of the bear's head. Kovarni was able to sit back and see the full grotesque glory of his monstrous creation. Reports within Unusual War Crimes gave a mixed account of what actually happened with the long-eared bear. Some say that, of course, the brain and eyes of the baked prisoner never took with the physiognomy of the brown bear. The bear never regained life, even with electric shock. Other, more obscure findings of the experiment told a different story. They recalled Dr. Kovarni toiling over the great body of the long-eared bear, shocking and shocking it until finally it woke up. They say it sat up, its half-boiled man's eyes training right on Kovarni. They say its hare's ears stood erect as the beast sat up, shook its head, and immediately attacked the treacherous Russian doctor. They say it roared and swiped giant claws all over the doctor's face and chest, all the while getting sprayed by machine gun fire from nearby soldiers, taking the bullets like a T-34 tank. Reports say the bear picked up a howling Dr. Kovarni and walked over to the same industrial oven that had killed the POW and threw in the doctor, slamming the door shut and cranking the heat up until the knob broke. The doctor's screams were reported to wail out through the door of the oven, and the long-eared bear opened its great arms, taking in hundreds more bullets, until finally it collapsed. Reports say that upon approaching the great monster, a human-like moan escaped from its jaws, and right before the final bullet to the skull, one word was softly muttered. "Ma, ma." Tony slammed his book shut, his skin tingling with fright and disturbance. What was wrong with Devin for recommending such a horrid story? In fact, what was wrong with his school for assigning a book so heinous? Tony threw the book on his bedroom floor and looked up and out the window, just in time to see a great shadow pass by the Rappaport mansion. It didn't resemble the shadow of a bird in the moonlight. It was a thick, slow shadow. Tony turned his unease out of the book and toward his real-life moment. What was that? He looked at the clock. 12:13. He scoffed and realized he needed to sleep well before his hockey game the next day. He dove under the covers and led a splotchy night's sleep, troubled by dark dreams. Rose had gone off through the courtyard over to the guest house that stood near the main house. She had laid down, trying to shake off the daze she had fallen into since becoming lost in the faces of the pine paneling of the stairwell earlier. Sleep had not come easily, especially since Devin had not joined her in bed yet. She stared at the ceiling for a long time. Then, after what felt like days of staring, Rose saw a large shadow passing across the ceiling of her guest cottage. This startled her, and her eyes followed the shadow all the way across the ceiling and out of the cottage. The light of the lamp by her bedside had dimmed upon the shadow's passing, as if penetrating and stifling even electric light. She remained puzzled until, at long last, sleep took her. Devin was in the main living room near the dining area, almost fully finished with a bottle of Chateau Lafite Rothschild Bordeaux wine and half a quart of Rocky Road ice cream. He was gaming on a 95-inch television screen, as he loved doing any time he visited the Rappaports. At one point, a shadow passed right over the screen and took his focus off of his game, making him throw his hands up and half-drunkenly slur out curses. He shook it off, took the last big swig of expensive wine, and restarted his game. Madeline had gone right to bed, her mind light and unbothered.
she sweetly and comfortably snugged into the covers after clicking off her bedside lamp. She slept deeply and instantly, in a way that she didn't remember ever having slept before. She had no dreams, and therefore, no nightmares. The dark shadow that passed through Madeline's room and directly into her closet went completely unnoticed. Part 3. The Attack. The following day, a Sunday, started unremarkably. Devin had gotten up early, delightedly not hungover. That's why you drink the good stuff, he told himself, and headed off to do some chores down at his own family's house, which wasn't even 3 miles down the road from the Rappaports. Rose had slept well and had walked all the way to the kitchen to make coffee and get out some danishes from the fridge for the children's breakfast. She then had walked over to the children's wing of the mansion and rapped on Tony's door. Tony jostled, wiped the sleep and the nightmares from his eyes, gathered his hockey gear, and followed Rose to breakfast, and then with her onto the local ice center, where his team was to have a pickup game. Madeline, once again, had the entire mansion to herself for a few hours. She slept in and glowed the entire morning with the sheen of a restful night. She was chewing on a raspberry Danish in the kitchen when her eyes fell over to the ivory-white Kei Kawai baby grand piano that she had spent so many thousands of hours playing. She nodded to herself, finished breakfast, and walked over and planted on the bench. She looked down at the keys. Strangely, all of the black and white punched up strange and foreign to her eyes. What? She placed her hands on the keyboard, somehow not knowing where to rest each finger or how far to reach from thumb to pinky. She looked up and arranged the sheet music on the stand. She read over it. It may as well have been Romanian runes. She puzzled deeply, but didn't panic. She pressed her fingers down on the keys, and a clunky, misshapen noise banged out. She wasn't playing the right notes at all. She scoffed, before ringing out a girlish giggle. Piano is so silly, she heard herself say, before closing the cover of the keyboard and walking away from the baby grand. She spent the next few hours watching a stupid television show about idiots competing for love in the tropics. Once again, the day swiveled into night as the four young people reconvened around the dinner table, recounting the day's activities. Tony's team, the Ice Flyers, had won their scrimmage and were shaping up to be very competitive for when the regular season started in the fall. He had even scored a goal. Madeline shared about how she had played piano and watched television, again shying away from giving the others a concert, to their muted chagrin. During dinner, Madeline and Tony's parents had called Rose, and so everyone got to talk over the phone. After plates were cleaned, the children excused themselves to their wing, and so the group split up for the night. Madeline climbed into bed, once again feeling the warm wash of sleepiness cover her. Her mind was so shiny, so simple. She loved it. She loved not concerning herself with deep matters, her life only serving as a vessel of comfort. It was easy. She closed her eyes and began to drift off. Right before she took the plunge into sleep, a rustling noise snapped her eyes back open. All was dark in her room, but she heard something knocking around in her closet. She sat up and pushed her head forward to try and get a better look in the blackness. As she did, the double doors of her closet slowly creaked open to reveal a wide column of deep shadow. Madeline rubbed her eyes, somehow not frightened, only curious. On the doors to the left and right, Madeline could make out two gigantic, claw-like hands holding everything open. Then, in the very middle of the column of darkness within the closet, two tall, vertical, almond-like eyes opened yellow and seething, right below the ceiling. Madeline, it called softly, the same woman-like tone wafting out to the bed. Madeline's eyes didn't blink. She simply waited. Madeline! The voice within the closet changed from soft to roaring, holding an ancient and devastating rage.
The boom of this shouted word shook the entire room. Way down the hall, even Tony was half awakened, turning in his own bed. Madeline felt a pang of fear like she thought she had forgotten.
Thief!
The grating, low voice growled in the dark of the closet. The yellow eyes shrank into molten daggers.
What do you mean, thief?
Madeline innocently inquired, having subconsciously raised her comforter to her chin. The yellow eyes in the closet eased and opened back up to their original size. The eyes studied Madeline up and down, pausing for consideration, as if reading her mind.
It's in this house. I know.
The voice returned to a lower, feminine timbre.
I will find it, and I will take back much more than was stolen.
Madeline turned her face in confusion, keeping the covers under her face.
But first, the voice said with a teasing tone.
The yellow eyes lowered again and trained two midnight pupils on Madeline like an executioner handing out his judgment. One of the claw-like hands released the closet door and stretched slowly across the room and over the bed to Madeline's face, although the rest of the creature's body remained in the darkness of the closet. Madeline followed the claw with her eyes as it approached her face and stopped just short of her nose. The claw gave a wet, gritty snap, like a lighter trying to ignite in a rainstorm. The claw then dropped on top of the covers over Madeline's chest, and the entire arm retreated back to the closet, like a rapidly retracting fire hose. One of the yellow eyes winked at Madeline, then both doors of the closet were pulled shut with a ferocious bang, pulling off the left side from its hinges. Madeline shivered under her covers, once again alone in the dark. Then, something within her changed. No, not changed. Reverted. The hibernating snakes in her brain thawed and began to slither and hiss once more. She began to tremble.
You're doomed. It's time to end your life, Madeline.
A familiar yet horrible thought projected across her psyche. Madeline's eyes twitched.
You'll never get rid of me unless you kill yourself.
Tony snapped out of sleep. Yes, that boom was real. He was not dreaming. He scanned over his dark room, the only source of any low light being his window, which brought in reflected rays from a now full moon. He slowly crawled out of bed and walked over to his door. He gently creaked it open, easing one eye over to the crack and peering down the long, dark hallway that separated his and Madeline's rooms. Nothing down there except pungent shadow. His breath shallow, he then decided to walk over and check out the window. He approached it and got up on his toes to see out. His eyes flew open, and he was instantly wide awake, a surge of adrenaline entering his body like a needle to the heart.
There was something on the front lawn, in the moonlight, down on all fours, and then raising up on two legs. It looked big.
At full height, it had to be at least 10 feet. The shadows of two tall ears topped its wide head. Pale, glowing eyes decorated its otherwise dark face. Only one thought crossed Tony's young mind.
No!
He whispered, screamed. He shut the thin curtains and ran back to his bed and flew under the covers. He shivered there for a couple of minutes, wondering if he was still dreaming. Having lost the ability to fall asleep, he decided, at long last, to walk back over and look out the window again, hopefully proving his late-night eyes to be unreliable narrators. He lowered the blankets from his head. In the window, behind the curtain, a large, round shadow pressed in, with two glowing eyes piercing the dark and fixed right on Tony. Whatever that thing was, it had somehow climbed up the wall and was now looking into his bedroom. Tony screamed and ran over to his closet, slamming the door shut. He got down on his knees and listened. He thought he could hear
clacking and woofing and chuffing from outside his window. Then, all went silent. Tony remained in the dark of his closet, breathing rapidly and not blinking for what seemed like hours. Then, he heard his bedroom door being roughly opened. He gasped and threw himself to the back wall of the closet. Ouch! He felt himself hit his hockey gear that he had packed away earlier. The stick. He grabbed the stick and placed it against the closet door under the back of a knob to help keep it closed. He held both hands against it and pressed tight. Heavy footsteps boomed across his bedroom, and then he heard a sharp swipe on his closet door. He heard baying and growling. Another swipe. Tony's mind scrambled. He looked around the dark of the closet, trying to remember if there was anything in here that he could use to defend himself. His skates. The blade of his hockey skates. He kept one arm on the stick against the back of the door and reached the other hand back and grabbed one of his sharp-bladed skates. He put his whole hand into it, ignoring the smell of the recent game, and wielded it like a dagger. His heart raced. He needed to summon some bravery. Madeline. He had to protect Madeline and the others from whatever this thing was. He shuddered a quick nod to himself and waited for this thing to make a move. Then, he heard the strangest noise he would ever hear in his life. Ma. Ma. A low, heavy voice called out from the other side of the closet door. Tony paused. The entire door ripped open, decimating it and even taking and snapping the hockey stick. Tony fell back. There, in his room, on two legs now, stood a large, strange bear in the full moonlight. Stitched on, long ears stood tall, and its jaw hung open as if dislocated. Two half-boiled white eyes glowed down, pinpointing Tony. It raised a fleshy, razor-clawed paw. For Madeline, for the others, for his family's home. Tony got up and raged over to the beast and sliced his hockey skate across its face, catching it on its upper lip and severing through its nose, popping an eyeball like an over-easy egg and removing one of its long ears. The bear roared in pain, bringing up a paw to its mutilated face. Tony raised his skate once again to attack. The bear roared an embarrassed, cowardly warning, keeping a paw to its sliced eye, and lowered down. It galloped out of Tony's room on three legs, whining out a moan like a midnight train whistle. Tony felt a surge of pride in the moonlight of his bedroom, the floor scattered with pieces of his closet door. He walked over and looked down the hallway to see the giant bear turn and head toward the living room. He had to go wake up Madeline, and they had to get out of this house. Madeline sat in bed, squirming with tormented thoughts. They were back, and they were more horrible than ever. She held the heels of her palms to her cheeks and squeezed her skull. She felt her heartbeat throb in her temples. "Tonight is the night you must kill yourself. You will never get rid of this. You have to murder the others. Go to the kitchen and find the knives. You know what drawer they're in. Kill Devin first. He's playing video games and won't see you coming. Then, murder Rose. Bring their bodies to your room afterwards. Molest them on your bed. Then, slice them up and play with them. Cover yourself with their organs and dance. Dance! Then, Tony can hear and come to your room. Then, kill yourself right in front of him." Madeline screamed and pounded fists against her inflamed head. Meanwhile, Devin sat in the living room on the big sectional couch and played video games. He had finished a bottle of wine with Rose earlier, and they had a pretty great makeout session, at least until Devin's nose erupted with blood and it spilled down to Rose's shirt. She was usually more patient with his condition, but this time was completely turned off. He apologized,
but also scoffed, telling her that he can't help it, and that if anything, it helped him understand what she went through with her body every few weeks. That did not go over well, and so Rose stormed off to the guest cottage, leaving Devon to his wine and video games. He played, not doing so well, until a shaking sound from behind caught his attention. He paused the game and took off his headset, throwing his eyes back to the hallway that led to the children's wing. A gallop of several large feet boomed and banged over the floorboards, growing nearer and nearer to the entrance of the living room there in the dark. Devon could hear a roar like a grizzly bear, a hungry, devilish roar. It got closer and closer. Devon wiped his eyes, not believing what he was perceiving. Just when the sound approached the living room as close as it could, it stopped. Someone exited the hallway and slowly turned to face Devon, who had now stood up from the couch, throwing down his controller. It wasn't a nightmare beast. It wasn't an animal. "Rose?" Devon asked, full of fear. Rose stood there at the mouth of the hallway in the almost full dark. Devon recognized her silver-lined silhouette. It seemed as though she was fully naked and covered in some thick liquid. "Hey, Devon, where did I put that rock that I found in the cave yesterday?" she asked, sweetly, yet strangely. Something about her didn't seem like Rose at all. "What? Rose?" "Devon, where is the stone?" Her shadowed, naked body stood still, yet her voice turned stern.
It's in your purse, remember? That's always where I keep cool stuff I find."
Devon raised his shoulders like he was stating the obvious.
"Okay, Devon. I love you."
Rose's likeness sang out to him across the living room. Devon leaned his head back in amazement. They had never said those words to each other.
"What? You do?"
he yelled in surprise.
"I always have. I always will," she answered.
"Well, babe, that's great news. I love you too, babe. Come here."
Devon began to walk toward the shadowed outline of his beloved Rose. But as he approached her, he could definitely decide that she was naked and covered in dark liquid.
"I have to go," Rose said, this time in a low, angry voice.
Devon heard a click and a creak and looked over past the hotel lobby-sized kitchen and through the foyer and saw the front door slowly open on its own. Then, Rose tucked her arms into her chest and began running toward it and quickly escaped into the night.
"Babe? Babe! Rose!"
Devon, bewildered but still buzzing off of wine and love, chased after whom he thought was Rose, running out of the mansion and into the night under the full sturgeon moon. Tony banged on Madeline's door, having run all the way down the hall once he could no longer hear the long-eared bear. He still held his sharp hockey skate. He had to get Madeline out of here with him.
"Maddie?"
he yelled, banging on her door. Madeline flinched at the sound and turned toward it. Her mind was drowning with boiling ideas. She got out of bed and ran to the door, locking it and using all of her weight to hold the knob.
"No, Tony, leave me alone!"
she screamed desperately, her brain sending her messages of murder and sodomy and suicide without relent. She cried loudly.
"Maddie, we have to get out of here now!"
Tony banged on the door with his fists.
"No, Tony, you don't know what I'm capable of. I'm crazy, Tony. I'm going to go to hell."
"What are you talking about, Maddie? You're not crazy. We got to get out of here now. It's not safe."
"You're not safe with me, Tony. I don't want to hurt you."
Madeline half screamed, half sobbed, painful tears running down her face in the dark.
"You could never hurt me, Maddie. We have to get out of here and then we can find you some help,"
Tony yelped, feeling his own tears welling up and then spilling down his cheeks.
"Tony, if I snap and try to hurt you, you have to promise that you'll kill me before I kill you,"
Madeline screamed through the door.
Tony couldn't believe what he was hearing. He took furiously quick breaths.
You have to promise me, Tony. Promise. Fine, Maddie. I have my hockey skate here with me. I just fought off a bear with it. And if you try to hurt me, then I'll have to kill you.
He couldn't understand the words coming from his mouth. He tasted salt from his tears. Madeline also sobbed, and then unlocked and opened the door. Her terrible thoughts waned for a moment, enough for her to show some semblance of herself.
Tony!
She collapsed into her brother's arms. He dropped the skate and hugged his sister tighter than he ever had. They both cried together.
You're not crazy, Maddie. I know you. You're my hero. You just need some help, Maddie. Even heroes need help.
She had never heard Tony call her his hero. A new wave of tears seeped out from her. Her brain cooled.
We gotta leave the house, Maddie.
Madeline snapped back into focus, wiping her face.
You're right. Rose, Devin, we have to get them.
Rose was awakened from her sleep in the guest cottage, having turned in early after her and Devin's spat. She heard a noise underneath the bed. She adjusted herself, then woke up enough to fully listen. Ears open, she could hear what sounded like teeth chewing on wood. Something biting, grinding against wood, sounding like it was ripping off chunks. Rose's green eyes widened. She took breaths through her nose, her heartbeat quickening. Then, a series of bumps from underneath lifted her bed slightly. The chewing noise continued and got louder. It started sounding wet, sloppy, frenzied. Rose quickly grabbed her phone and turned on the flashlight, leaning over and pointing down to the floor. For the rest of her life, she would wish she hadn't done so. The silver circle of flashlight showed her a great sprawl of greasy, black hair, crowning a wet, bubbling, pale, fleshy mass peeking out from under her bed. Whatever it was, it seemed to have a large, round mouth, and it seemed to be sucking on the opening of her white leather purse. Two yellow, vertical eyes glowed open from underneath the black, leaf and dirt-filled hair. Rose screamed, a scream that was quickly muffled as her attacker crawled out from under the bed and onto her face. Madeline and Tony ran from their wing of the house into the living room.
Devin! Rose!
Tony called out, keeping his ice skate raised.
Guys!
Madeline yelled. There was no answer, only darkness throughout the main body of the mansion.
The cottage!
Madeline said loudly, as the two of them met eyes and then began in a sprint out of the kitchen, through the courtyard under the full moon, and then over to the guest cottage.
Wait,
Madeline whispered to Tony and held an arm out to stop him from barging in.
Something's not right.
Madeline heard what sounded like somebody screaming through a soaked pillow. She creaked open the cottage door and turned the light on. The two children's eyes and mouths fell open in astute disgust and paralyzing terror. A large mass of tallow-covered flesh almost took up the entire bedroom of the cottage. It had arms on the bed and legs against the wall. Bulbous rolls of fat rippled throughout its body. Its head was wide and elliptical, and a long mess of black hair flowed down to the floor like a waterfall of ink. It had Rose pinned to her pillow, stretching a mouth around her face, looking like its lips could split at any moment. Two yellow eyes adorned its face right above the straining mouth. Long teeth pierced Rose's eyes and cheeks and chin. Tony looked and saw clusters of holes in the loose, greasy skin of its back and sides, with small crustacean-like creatures burrowed in deep like barnacles, their little claws and antennae showing within the inflamed rims of the cavities. Rose's arms were held down to the bed by pinchers that grew out of where the monster's ears would be. She writhed in agony underneath her muffled scream, covered by the creature's stretched, putrid mouth.
Tony also screamed.
Madeline took it all in. This was her fault. Maybe the voice within her was right about one thing. She needed to be the one to die, not Tony. This was all her fault. She was better off dead after all of this.
Tony, give me the skate.
What?
Hand me the skate, Tony. This is all my fault, and I have to fight it.
She held out her hand. Tony shuddered and handed her the skate, still wondering if he was in some horrible dream.
Madeline nodded at her little brother. Maybe she could be his hero after all.
She turned back toward the monster on top of Rose and the bed, and raised the skate and began to drop it blade first with as much force as she could. The vertical yellow eyes swiveled around the terrible face of the monster and trained right on Madeline. A large, crab-like claw that had been buried by its obese belly sprang forth and grabbed Madeline around the waist, not squeezing hard enough to kill her, but with more than enough force to stop her. Rose kept on screaming within the monster's mouth, the sound stifled, but growing ever insane with pain and horror. Madeline began chopping at the clawed arm with the skate, and the flesh began to break, showing a shell underneath. After a few good strikes, the claw fell off entirely. Tony, standing behind Madeline with hands to his screaming mouth, could only watch his hero in terror and wonder.
"Get out!"
Madeline screamed. The monster howled in pain, its lips and teeth still covering Rose's face. Rose stopped her screaming and went still, just as the creature bit deeply into her cheeks, eyes, and forehead, causing a wet crunch. The monster began to raise up off the bed, still biting down on Rose's face and dragging her with it. The huge body of the thing began to crawl and slither toward a nearby window, using its other clawed arm to break the glass. It began to seep out of the cottage bedroom until Rose's horizontally held body caught the walls around the window. Two more claws came forth out of some disgusting recess of the creature's torso and snapped Rose's spine in half, folding her body up, slamming it like a hated book. The creature spilled out of the window with Rose's body and off into the night. Madeline dropped the skate. The severed claw on the floor twitched to life and crawled toward and out the window after the rest of its body. Tony grabbed her from behind, and they both sobbed and screamed. No one knows where it comes from. Epilogue. The body of Rose Blanchard was found on private property near Hidden Lake State Park after police were led there by the tip of Madeline Rappaport. Rose was found crumpled outside of a cave with traumatic facial avulsion, with evidence of unstable thoracolumbar fracture dislocation consistent with traumatic transection and adipose tissue avulsion. In other words, her face was eaten off and her spine was snapped in half. She also had cuts deep into her stomach and buttocks, where her fat was forcibly removed. She was also found with the DNA in blood of her boyfriend, Devin Walton. After authorities were notified by two horribly upset children at the Rappaport mansion, a patrol was sent to the premises, but was met beforehand by Devin Walton, who was running alongside the road in the dark. He was stopped and questioned, but kept repeating that he was looking for Rose. He seemed shaken. A second patrol car took him in and down to the station for further questioning, held until DNA evidence had him convicted as the murderer. The police had notified Mr. and Mrs. Rappaport of the crime almost as soon as the children had called. They chartered a private jet and were home well before morning. They pulled up to the house to blue lights whirring, and their two children huddled under shock blankets, surrounded by officials. Tony and Madeline sprinted toward them, shedding their covers.
"I need help! I need so much help!"
Madeline buried her face on her mother's shoulder and wept. Tony also took into his father's arms, sobbing.
In the weeks and months that followed that horrific night, Madeline and Tony Rappaport got the help they needed. Tony was able to go back to school much sooner than his sister. Madeline found a wonderful team of doctors and therapists that could help her manage her mental condition. Sitting on a couch in a cozy room, Madeline did what she did best. She learned. She learned that she was not crazy. She learned that what she had was actually common and manageable. She learned that everybody got these strange, intrusive thoughts from time to time. She learned that these thoughts don't come from her and should not even be considered or engaged with. She learned that she had to let these thoughts in and through her and not fight them. She learned that a happy life was still possible, even with all she had been through. The Rappaports fought all they could with the investigation and trial of Devin Walton, but the evidence was just too strong. He would die in prison. The entire family would visit him regularly and continue to try to find a way to prove him innocent. On a bright September day, over 1 year since the deadly night, Madeline found herself walking home from another successful session with her favorite doctor. The afternoon rays fell through the turning leaves and scattered, dappled, into 1,000 sundrops on the sidewalk. Madeline smiled. She felt like that too, a golden light, just broken up into pieces. A dark, bluish blur whirred past her periphery. She gasped and shot eyes up to a branch. An indigo bunting sat, turning its beautiful little head straight toward Madeline. She reached into her book bag and pulled up her camera, quickly training and focusing the lens before taking the photo. She smiled down at the footage before looking back up and thanking the bird as it flew away. When she got home, she was surprised by a pancake meal prepared by her parents. Tony joined in too, and together they all enjoyed a delicious breakfast at dinner. Madeline got emotionally joyful at one point, tears watering the rims of her eyes as she giggled down at the simple beauty of blueberry pancakes with her family. Later that evening, she sat down at the piano and started in on a new piece, one that Juilliard had asked her to compose for one of their youth programs. It was going perfectly, perhaps the greatest thing she had ever written, until about halfway through when she messed up a note.
"You'll never get rid of me, you failure! Not until you really snap and kill yourself!"
A horrible voice barked at her within her brain. Madeline didn't pay it any mind. She just kept on playing right where she left off, smiling and getting lost in her own music. No one knows where it comes from. However, lots of people are able to live wonderful lives in spite of it. They're able to enjoy themselves and manage it. For Madeline, the horrible remains, as it most certainly always would, but it would never rain. Never again. You've been listening to The Horrible by Sam Morris. Sam Morris is a lifelong writer, just not in the usual sense. He was born to a musical family and has played piano and sang his entire life. He has also written songs for over 20 years. Having been a longtime horror fan, he first started writing short stories in 2022 and instantly loved it as a creative outlet, especially since it was so different from his usual world of music. Translating the art of songwriting into the form of short stories has proven very therapeutic to Sam, who must reach into the darker parts of his mind and exorcise the monsters that live there. And that, my friends, wraps up tonight's episode as well as this season. Sure, we've had some thrills and chills, some stories new and old, but perhaps the true horror was the friends that we made along the way. Of course, I'm not letting you off the hook that easily, listeners. We're rolling right into season 15 next week with a two-parter that I think you'll find quite creepy. In the meantime, thanks to Sam Morris for closing things out with me tonight, and thanks to all of you for joining me on the old Horror Hill. Until next time, friends, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.